tuned in was recorded earlier for broadcast at this time.
Welcome to Tuned In with Mike Johnson, a public service of Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. Now, here's Mike.
Thank you, Al Verde, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tuned In from Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. This morning, we're going to be talking about the coronavirus, the COVID-19, but in a slightly different way. The Delta variant, of course, has been very much in the news of late. And, of course, rightfully so. It's a very serious situation. But there are things that are happening in this world that look like they might be COVID-19 or related to coronavirus, but they may not be. Things like, you know, sinus issues, throat issues, postnasal drip. It can look similar, but they're not necessarily the same thing. My guest to talk about this morning is Dr. Mark Kerner. He is the head and neck surgeon and medical director of Cal West Head and Neck Surgical Institute, and he's on the staff with Dignity Health Northridge Hospital. Doctor, good morning.
Great. Good morning to you.
Thank you, Doctor, for being with us. And, you know, as we said there at the offset, there are so many things going on now in the world, especially with the Delta variant, that people might just see someone sneeze at you and think, well, that person must have, the virus. It's not always that simple, though, is it?
No. And so this is just bringing another sort of monkey wrench into the situation.
Yep.
of making it difficult to diagnose these upper respiratory and upper airway kind of syndromes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, you know, the new Delta variant is still presenting like the original strain, which is an upper respiratory infection, although we are seeing some of them that are just presenting with loss of smell, which is something we've seen a lot of now since the beginning of the whole coronavirus epidemic,
right.
Pandemic. And we're also seeing that, you know, when it progresses, it can progress into the pulmonary manifestations, which are, you know, the most serious. So the problem is what we have in terms of diagnosing these is when they're early and they're presenting like either upper airway allergies or just the common cold, which the coronavirus cousin is four or five of the strains of the coronavirus are the common cold virus. So we've got that whole gamut of things to think about.
It's got to make it increasingly frustrating for people to do what you do, to kind of get the public understanding that there are, you know, obviously you want to make sure that people are being secure with the Delta variant, but, you know, sometimes it's just a plain old cold. That's got to be very tough for you.
Right. So the good news is at least we have testing now. We actually have rapid tests that are available to us in the office, which are antigen tests, where it allows us to see if we can identify, you know, the viral particles of the coronavirus. So that gives us some help. We also have tests that can determine whether it's an RSV virus, which is called the respiratory syncytial virus, which typically affects kids and in young kids, but we're now seeing that in adults as well, which we're not really sure why. So there's a whole gamut of viral infections that, you know, we're seeing that all overlap in terms of runny nose, congestion, sore throat, postnasal drip, and those also overlap with allergies and upper allergy symptoms as well. So one of the things that makes it easier for us is the history. That is, people that have had allergies that pre-existed before the whole pandemic, then, you know, it's most likely that it's a flare-up of their seasonal allergies. So that's the first thing. And we can treat it like that if they're not progressing. And again, the first thing is the algorithm we use is, have they been vaccinated or have they had the coronavirus disease prior to this? So we're not really seeing very many people who definitively had a coronavirus infection a second time. But we are now starting to see some people that are testing positive that were vaccinated. So that's making this a little bit trickier, too.
Sure. And without a doubt, you know, I mean, I think that there are some folks in the population, some folks listening who probably think, well, I've been vaccinated. I should be good to go. You still have to protect yourself, though, because of the unknown, I guess, of the situation. Yes.
Well, yes. So the ones that we've seen, we have not seen anybody in our practice very, very sick on that second time. We have seen some positives, but they're presenting with like cold symptoms. So runny nose, some congestion, maybe even a sinus infection type presentation. So again, you know, we're just doing more culturing, we're doing more swabbing just to sort of help us, you know, guide us in our treatment decisions.
My guest is Dr. Mark Kerner. He is the head and neck surgeon and medical director of Cal West Head and Neck Surgical Institute. He's on the staff as well with Dignity Health Northridge Hospital. This is Tuned In from Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. Good morning. My name is Mike Johnson. Doctor, you know, we were talking here about the coronavirus and the variant that the Delta variant that, of course, has been in the news so much of late. From your perspective right now, you know, and I know it's impossible to read what's going to happen in 24 hours, but I mean, do you think we've kind of reached a plateau, or do you think it can get worse with this Delta variant?
Well, what we have that we can use as a guide is what's gone on in Europe. So mm-hmm. It appears that the UK has been a little bit ahead of us and some of the other European countries, and especially India as well. So what we saw with the Delta variant, which arose in India, is that there was a very, very large spike in infections, and that it came down very dramatically. And now a recent study that just got published showed that 67% or two-thirds of the population in India is testing positive with antibodies. So they had basically the infection rip through India, because I think on the order of only 3% of the population is vaccinated.
Oh my.
So they have a very low vaccination rate, but they had a very high rate of infectivity with the Delta strain, which appears to be more infectious than the original SARS-CoV-2 strain. So they had a very, very high peak of infections, which then came down dramatically. And so we're seeing that same sort of pattern in the UK right now. And we believe that those of us that follow this very closely, that we're going to probably see the same sort of pattern play out here. I'm hoping that's the case.
Yeah.
I wish we could get more people vaccinated. There seems to be this plateau of vaccination numbers that we've had here, and this vaccination hesitancy. And, you know, I understand that, but at the same time, I think for anybody that's at risk, you know, anybody that's got any underlying medical problems, obesity, over 40 years old, they absolutely should be vaccinated. And anybody up to, you know, down in the high teens where it's, you know, 18 years and above, you know, if they're in a high-risk job where they're out in the public, they should also be vaccinated as well, unless they have some other underlying reason to not get the vaccine.
I heard a story the other day, and you can correct me if you heard it differently than I heard it, that in the fall, when schools begin to open again, late summer, early fall, I guess it would be, it may be mandated for all kids K to 12 to be masked for those of them going back to school.
Sure.
To that idea, what is the youngest age, in your opinion, that should be vaccinated?
Well, here's the thing. Honestly, I think we should be maybe 15 and above.
Yep. Okay.
I don't like this vaccine for younger kids yet for a number of reasons. One, we don't have enough data yet. Number two, the disease in that age group is very, very mild, even with the Delta variant.
Okay.
The fatality rate's virtually zero. Now, it's still unclear whether they can spread the disease. And if the teacher, for example, is worried, well, the teacher should be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
So they're protected. So the other thing, too, is if you now really look at the masking studies and you look at that throughout all countries, unless you're wearing an N95 mask all the time, at, you know, constantly, which nobody is really doing in
sure.
the public.
Sure.
There's no way that the mask, there's absolutely no benefit from wearing the mask. Now, I know it's controversial. Everyone's going to hate me for saying that, but the data is the data. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the countries where the mask use was in the 90th percentile range, the numbers of infections peaked and came down despite the mask use. So what's probably going on is something that a lot of the aerosol scientists have been working on, which is the virus will transmute through those masks, through most of our masking the mask unless it's an N95,
mm-hmm.
and they're aerosol, so they're going to transmit 20-25 feet, and this sort of droplet precaution that we use for the flu, which is masks and social distancing, doesn't really apply to the coronavirus, because when you look at these mitigation strategies, and that's what we call those are mitigation strategies that were instituted, they made really no difference at all.
Well, people, of course, you're right. Some folks are not going to take kindly to what you had to say there, but I think the idea might be, in some people's minds, you have to do something. And even if one of those thin masks might not be sufficient enough to do the job entirely, I guess the idea is, I got to do something, so let's put this on.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
But again, when you're talking about science, you're
sure.
talking about data, it's you have to say, okay, let's just be objective about this.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't need to be political. It needs to be objective. What does the science
sure.
really show us? Is the science showing us that masking is helping? Now, we know masking helps for the flu,
because mm-hmm.
The flu virus is primarily transmitted in droplet form. And sure enough, we saw a very, very low rate of flu virus infections last year when, a high percentage of the population were wearing masks. So we had a very, very low or almost non-existent flu season. So I'm not saying that it's completely irrelevant, but when we're talking about trying to protect ourselves against the coronavirus, it's really not going to be that effective. So if somebody's actively sick, well, they should be home.
Sure.
If somebody's symptomatic.
Sure.
Now, we still do know that it's mostly symptomatic people that are spreading the virus. The virus in an asymptomatic person is really not spread as dramatically or nearly as close to as much as someone who's sick, so has symptoms. So that's the time when someone who's symptomatic, meaning they have a cough, they have what seems to be an upper respiratory infection, they should see their doctor and they should be tested.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're negative, then they can go about their business. If they're positive, then they need to stay home. So just like we would with the flu, it's really no different than that.
Yeah, a lot of it does come down to common sense as well. I mean, what you're talking about there is definitely common sense. If you're sick,
right.
you should be home one way or the other. Obviously, in this day and age, so now the interesting thing, the offshoot, of course, of what 2020 brought the world and into 2021 is that so much of business has taken place from people's kitchens and living rooms because of the mother of necessity, that sort of thing.
Right.
So a lot of work is still accomplished from home. Some things don't work as well, obviously,
sure.
but there are obviously advances that have taken place because of things like Zoom.
Right.
Yeah.
And let's go back to kids. When we send our kids to school, a lot of times parents who don't have child care or difficulty obtaining child care, the kid wakes up with a sniffles or a cold or sort of an upper respiratory infectious type syndrome.
Right.
We encourage, we've always encouraged them to keep them at home, but
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they don't. They send them to school. And so, now it's more than just potentially a cold. Now we have to contend with this, with a coronavirus infection.
Right.
So is it that, or is it just the common cold, or is it, just another viral illness? So, or what, or is it a bacterial sinusitis? So, we shouldn't be sending our kids to school if they're sick to begin with. So
sure.
it's just like you said, there is some common sense still here. I'm not worried about the asymptomatics because the spread of people really, there's really very scant evidence for colonization and spread among asymptomatic carriers, but it's those that are having some symptoms. And I think that if we keep those kids at home, because if you send those kids even to school with a mask on, they're going to transmit that virus.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to you're not going to protect the others around them.
Right.
Now the flip side is. And again, this is something that a lot of immunologists and a lot of doctors have discussed, which is, we need to reach population immunity. And, by having these lockdowns, which we've never really done in the past, and there is a significant group of epidemiologists who believe that was a mistake, is that you got to get the young, healthy people back out in the community, and you got to get the disease, you know, progressed through the population enough so that it protects the older, more vulnerable populations. And so by, you know, locking those people down and keeping healthy people away and keeping healthy people, you know, locked down, this has prolonged the time that it takes for the disease to get through the population.
Do you think that was done in part because of ignorance, or do you think that was done in part because it was just a knee-jerk reaction?
I think it was erroneous. I think there's no data, there's no scientific data to back doing that. We've never really done that in the history of epidemiology, and it just, you know, when you look at the population data from around the world, not just from the United States, but Europe, Iceland, Sweden, and all the populations that tried these various maneuvers, these mitigation strategies didn't really work. So, and we knew early on in this pandemic that the people that were most vulnerable, we knew this out of the Italian population, the Iranian population that got hit early, and the Chinese population, that the elderly were being affected far more frequently and far more severely than the young population. The flip side of that is the flu a lot of times kills young people.
Hmm.
And the flu can be far more deadly to, you know, the younger population. So that still hasn't been worked out why that's the case.
Yeah, I was going to say it would seem to me logically, if it works for the same for one, it would work the same for both, but having to go the other way around seems like, yeah, well, almost contrary to what might be the mindset.
Well, I have my theory about that, which we can discuss.
Sure.
There is a theory, my theory, and it's something I've given a lot of thought to, and I've read thousands of articles now and I've reviewed, you know, tons of literature. I see the literature basically every day. I'm reviewing papers and articles out of China, Italy, everywhere that epidemiologists are publishing and basic scientists are publishing. My background before medical school was immunology and microbiology, so this is something near and dear to my heart. So one of the things that may affect why the young population, the children, are affected at a far less severity than older people is the presence of adenoid tissue. And we know that young kids have adenoids. You've heard of that,
mm-hmm.
Adenoids and big tonsils. And so that's immune tissue.
Hmm.
And that immune tissue is very active when we're younger, and it tends to dissipate as we become teenagers. So in this young population, we have a very brisk immune response in the nasopharynx. That's the area behind the nose where the virus, where the coronavirus in particular, sets up, and when we first are infected with the virus, reproduces in those tissues in the nasopharynx. It produces, and then once it starts to reproduce in those tissues, that's when it then progresses into a lung infection. So there's a period of time that occurs. People don't just go from catching the virus to sort of having, you know, a little sniffle to right to, you know, severe lung infection.
Sure.
There's a lag time that occurs, and in that lag time, they have these upper respiratory symptoms, right? They'll have maybe a little bit of a cough, or they'll have a runny nose, or the loss of smell. So all these things that are occurring in the back of the nose, and we know that's where the virus actually will reproduce readily. So, but in young kids, they tend to have, they do have a far more brisk and far more active immune system in the nasopharynx, which I think is protecting them.
Fascinating,
yes,
without a doubt.
Yes.
My guest is Dr. Mark Kerner. He's the head and neck surgeon and medical director of Cal West Head and Neck Surgical Institute and on the staff with Dignity Health Northridge Hospital. This is Tuned In from Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. Doctor, as we've been talking about these things this morning, and you kind of hit on the idea that last year the flu strain was down considerably, are you of a mind, and do you think that maybe, you know, let's pretend. Let's say that the Delta variant goes away tomorrow and
sure,
COVID's done tomorrow and everything is peaches and cream one more time. I am of a mindset that I think some folks are going to keep wearing masks basically for the rest of their lives just based upon what's happened here over the last year and a half. Do you think there'll be any benefit for people doing that?
You know, look, I have no problem with that. I encourage our patients that have any sort of immunodeficiency or have underlying medical problems, you know, if you're out, even if they've been vaccinated, mm-hmm. if you're out in public and you're in a very high-density public area and
sure.
you feel more comfortable wearing a mask, certainly wear a mask. It'll actually help you with other things. So, you know, and like I said, what we're seeing with the coronavirus infections and those that have been vaccinated, they're not as severe. They're not having those highly virulent episodes where they end up in pulmonary failure and death. So
right.
we're really not seeing those. So, okay, so if you want to prevent from yourself from getting other upper respiratory infections,
mm-hmm.
it'll absolutely help. So there's no, I have no problem with people wearing masks as long as they're wearing them correctly and you know, they're cleaning them or not reusing them, and that's totally fine. I think the problem is going to become in young kids, that it's very difficult for young kids to wear masks, and it's, if you look at the data on young kids, they actually can get sick because they can get contaminated, and then all of a sudden they're breathing, you know, and they're being exposed to contaminants that are
mm-hmm.
in the mask from touching it,
mm-hmm.
and end up may getting some other upper respiratory infections, non-corona type infections. So, again, we also need a certain amount of exposure to train our immune system as well. So there's the trade-off on that
sure.
as well. So
sure.
I'm all about mitigation strategies for certain diseases. If you really look at the data carefully, it didn't do a lot for the coronavirus, but it did do for other upper respiratory infections.
Okay.
Certainly cut down on the number of sinus infections, cut down on the flu. So certainly in those seasonal respiratory infections that we see, if people want to wear masks, it will certainly help. It's been going on in the Asian populations for years.
Yeah.
You know, they do it,
yep.
and again, primarily to protect themselves against the flu virus.
Yeah, I have visions of a few years ago when I was a teenager seeing these videos from countries in Asia where
sure.
the smog was so bad that,
sure.
that there would be people having to walk from one end of the street to the other, and they would have it on to protect themselves because the smog was was that bad.
Well, sure, and those chemical irritants, it will certainly cut down on some of that chemical irritation,
right.
and it will help them. So I have no issues with that whatsoever. I think, you know, I think we're just going to have to get to the point where we've got enough people in the population that have immunity to this disease either way. And I think it's going to end up being a natural immunity. It appears that people that have had the disease have a longer-lasting, stronger immune response that carries, you know, on for a lot longer than those that have had the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean the vaccine's ineffective. What it means is that the vaccine is preventing severe disease. It's just that the best thing is obviously to get the disease and get over it without having any adverse sequelae from the disease, but 'cause that's triggering your best immune response.
I'm thinking also in the days ahead here, as we are nearing fall, there's a new football stadium here in Los Angeles, as we both know,
sure.
and there are going to be many, many fans who are going to want to be attending games there at that stadium, and of course concerts are starting to come back as well. I think there are going to be people who will have their masks on to go and see the football games or go to see the concerts, and there are going to be some who won't, obviously. And that's going to be personal preference, isn't it?
I think it is. And
yeah.
I think, you know, I think if you feel more comfortable doing that, that's fine. You know, I have, you know, at least our staff, we're constantly exposed to all kinds of upper respiratory stuff. My whole staff's been vaccinated. We do, because of OSHA requirements, wear a mask in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, we do have air scrubbers and you know, very high intensity filters. So I think, you know, as businesses start to adopt some of those systems as well, I think people will be a little bit safer and they'll be, you know, we'll see a little bit less transmission. But also, again, with this big Delta spike,
mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see that Delta spike run through the population or the rest of the population that either hasn't had the disease or been vaccinated. It's going to get in through the population. And my personal prediction is that the spike will be very, very high and very, very short, won't be long-lasting, and will follow the patterns that we're seeing, you know, both in UK and in some other European countries, because there's just no reason why we should be any different.
Doctor, we're almost out of time, but I think just a way of review here for everyone whom I have tuned in late. The key thing, of course, is, you know, as we talked about earlier, there's throat issues, there's sinus issues, there's sure. postnasal drip, things like this. If you're not sure, get yourself checked out, yes?
Absolutely. So two things. One of my biggest pet peeves of this whole thing with the vaccines and masking and all these other mitigation strategies, talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knows you better than your own personal doctor. And, you know, don't listen to the doctors on TV, including me. Listen, you know, because what I'll tell you is exactly what I tell everybody else is ask your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm behind closed doors with patients, we discuss vaccines. You know, I do have some that are not vaccinated, and we sit down and we discuss why.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they not want to get it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, we try to educate our patients, you know, why they should have it if they didn't have it, or if they had the disease, they're okay. You know, if they've definitively had a COVID infection, well, then they don't need the vaccine. The fact of the matter is natural immunity is going to protect them. So that's the one thing I do have against mandatory vaccines, is we don't really need to vaccinate people that had the disease.
Dr. Mark Kerner, thanks for being with us this morning.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Mark Kerner is the head and neck surgeon and medical director of CalWest Head and Neck Surgical Institute, and he is on staff with Dignity Health Northridge Hospital. Some information and some food for thought, no doubt about it. My name is Mike Johnson. Thanks for listening to Tuned In.
Thanks for listening to Tuned In with Mike Johnson. To contact Mike, email him at tunedinmj@gmail.com. That's tunedinmj@gmail.com. Or write Mike Johnson, Tuned In, P.O. Box 250028, Los Angeles 90025. Thanks for listening and staying tuned in.